We've talked about these things before, but someone put in, and I'm not going to ask if they're in the room or not, because I don't want them to hold a hand up because they spelled explain, E-X-P-L-E-I-N.
That's not right.
Explain.
I didn't do that.
Well, it's not your handwriting, and it's not my handwriting. So. Explain the role and the requirements and the role to be a deacon, what is expected of them, of the church, as well as otherwise. And actually, the part that I didn't read this morning, there was something about should they accept if they don't support the church?
No.
the quick answer to that one is a no. Right. No, not.
Can we go home now?
Oh, no. You know better. So.
I did. Well, I was in the church there in North Carolina. Okay. I had the church in Columbia, South Carolina, the other side of Columbia. Anyhow, they had a deacon's meeting one time. One of the older deacons, the elders, got up before the meeting started and said, "I make a motion that preacher resign." So I guess he didn't agree with a lot of things in the church and everything else. But when you said that, that just whacked me. But every meeting, preacher never did resign.
Oh, he said that every meeting?
Hell yeah.
Oh.
He didn't want him around, I guess.
Yeah, that I created quite a stir one time, and the most recent former president of an institution in northern Greenville County, won't give the name, but the initials are North Greenville, was chair of deacons, and the deacons were actually, there was a move to, they wanted to redo how deacons were elected, and so on a Wednesday night, prior to the Sunday, there was a question and answer period. And they actually, Susan, they actually got up, and the proposal was that they would, that deacons would be selected based on 1 Timothy chapter 3, and that the deacons, the currently serving deacons, would take the names of those nominated, and then the currently serving deacons would determine who was worthy of being on the next ballot to be selected as deacons. And there are those. I raised my hand and said, well, why not also include Acts chapter 6? And, well, what's that? And I talked about the choosing of those first servants later known as deacons. Well, we might consider that. We talked about women and that Phoebe was a deacon and that kind of stuff. And I said, and, you know, what translation are you going to use? And he said, well, I guess we'll use the King James. I said, well, why not have somebody pull out a Greek text and say.
Good. You beat on the translator.
But, no, there were two other, well, there was one other religion professor that was there. And so it didn't get very far on Sunday morning. I guess are there any questions? This is a proposal. Are there any questions? And he's looking like this, and I'm in the choir like this. And somebody said, there's one in the choir. And so when he turned around, if looks could have killed, I would have been darted out. And my only question was, now, do I understand correctly that the church will nominate people, and then rather than the church, those whom the church nominates who get the most votes serving, the deacons will then sit down with those names, and the deacons will handpick who they want to be on the next ballot? Another dirty look, and yes. That's all I had to say. Hands went up all over the place, and more people stood up, and that proposal failed miserably.
How long do you remember that?
Several years.
I guess preacher was right after that. How long were you remember after that?
Several years. But back to that, there is a large church in Greenville County, Baptist Church in Greenville County, where Mary, and talking with someone who she knows who has a pretty important position there, committee position, and talking about those kinds of things. And this person said that one of the their former pastor who has left and gone somewhere else, and now they got somebody else in there and they're trying to figure out how to do this. He is the one who determined who would get onto the ballot for deacons. There would be names submitted, and then he would go through them, not the deacons. And then he would submit that to the deacons, who would then approve what he said, and then the church voted on those, which is not the way Baptists are supposed to do it. And I don't think it's the way it's supposed to be done anyway. No. But then, you know, so there, and then there are those who it's, you know, it's just very simply popular vote. There are, I know that there are a lot of places where, as well, where even not just deacons, but elders in some churches are chosen in different ways like that. Most of the ones with which I'm familiar, either the senior person or there's a small group and they determine who will serve in what capacity from top to bottom. My youngest brother and his wife, you know, they were at the Friends meeting, and the minister they've got now, I think he would not, Phil said he'll never admit in what church he was raised. He just says he went to Guilford, which is a Quaker college, and he did some things there. But Quakers, first of all, Quakers do not take communion, and Quakers don't have altar calls. The Spirit moves and all that kind of stuff. And Quakers don't baptize like other folks. But this guy came in, and there is actually an opportunity for people to make a profession of faith after Sunday school, because they have everybody gathers after Sunday school and they have a report and prayer requests and that kind of thing. And then at the end of the service, there is an altar call, and he has begun serving communion. But there, and this particular Quaker church is not the conservative Quaker church, which is further down the road, and the sign says conservative. But they have had, you know, they've had both male and female pastors. When they hired this guy, he then brought in some folks that he knew from other places and started appointing them to all the leadership roles in the church. So the older folks, my sister-in-law's father that died several months back, he used to hold positions in the church all the time. He hadn't held a position in the church in probably 15 years since that guy came. And so there are all kinds of ways that different groups do, but the big box churches, and answer your question, pretty much there's a small group that decides who serves where.
But no deacons or elders.
They call them different things. They will call them deacons. But they're still chosen primarily by that small group and not voted on by the church at large. When we go to Acts chapter 6, that choosing of those first ones who were to serve tables, and Stephen was the chief of those, the whole body voted. Ed?
How do these churches that you're talking about evolve into this? Is the church set up by that to start with? Does the membership not have any worries?
Well,
okay, you guys be the power group here, and you decide
A lot of the big box churches are set up that way. The folks who start them, and typically there is a core group that goes in to start them. Even, you know, and that's one of the things somebody a few years ago said, made the comment. Their fear was that one day we might become a community church rather than a Baptist church. And what I wanted to say to that person, but I didn't want to get into an argument, is most of the community churches that get started in the South are started by the Southern Baptist Convention, and they don't want Baptist in the name. But they set it up kind of like that. But what people are learning, and I know this is a little bit away from this, but it relates, what people are learning in seminaries, and they have now for the last close to 20 years in a lot of Southern Baptist seminaries, is that the minister is the end-all, be-all, and the final decision-maker. And so they come in, churches bring in folks to be pastor or whatever, and that's the model that they push once they get there. I have talked with a variety of folks, including some seminary professors in other seminaries who have friends that still teach there or who have left from teaching at some of the SBC schools because that's the primary focus when it comes to the pastoral role. You're not just the spiritual leader, you're the final determiner when it comes to decisions.
Looks like you're Southern Baptist that there would be a consistent structure
individual churches, yeah, autonomy of the local church.
Yeah.
But when the ministers that are coming out are trained that way, and then they come into the churches, yeah, that's kind of the direction that they've headed for a number of years now. And of course, if you look at the SBC now, the current SBC, that's how the power structure is really at the top down. And which used to be from the grassroots up. And
in part, not in whole, black churches are the way they are today. There's not a place thinking that people are coming and wanting to be a part of it because nobody wants to be, no, I don't think it's doing. Most people don't want to get into a power struggle with people.
No, they don't want to get into a power struggle. And but one of the popularities, I think, of the big box churches has been, and some other large churches, not just the big box like New Spring and Brookwood and things like that, but some of the other large churches with that kind of where at least the spiritual authority rests in the senior ministry and you don't ask questions and that kind of thing is because people, I really think, and I've talked to some folks and they said, well, yeah, they want somebody who can tell them what they are to believe. And they can say, well, the preacher said it, and so I'm going to hold on to it. Because they don't want to think. Because the world is so chaotic, and at their jobs, and at the schools, and at other things, they've got all this going on, all this turmoil. They want to have a place where they can go, and this one person can tell them, this is what you must believe, not even necessarily why, but this is just what you believe, and that's it. And then they don't have to think and deal with and wrestle with the issues.
Actually, no direction. Not just say the Catholic Church or the Presbyterian Church or the Methodist Church. They have, as far as I know, I guess it is, I don't study it, but I would assume that all of the churches toe the same line.
Yes and no. Even in Roman Catholicism, there are different offshoots now. And actually, depending on not all, while the Pope speaks and the cardinals under the Pope and the archbishops and all of that disseminate this kind of thing and oversee, and they do have their sacred congregation for the doctrine of the faith that checks out all the writings and all the preaching to put the imprimatur stamp on it or not. The American Catholic Church, there are two or three different branches of the American Catholic Church that do not toe the line. Right. So, yes and no. European Catholicism, cathedrals are practically empty in a lot of major cities in Europe. They used to be full, they're practically empty. Because people don't agree with some of the things coming out. Methodists, there's several different branches of Methodists. Same thing with Presbyterians. You got PCA, which is the far right. You got PCUSA, which is the far left in Presbyterian circles. And in between, you've got EPC, the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, and you got the ARPs. And even there, you got little offshoots. So you may be part of one synod, and most of the churches go along, but not all. But they do. They vote churches and folks out more readily. I mean, it's not a plethora of that, but they do that more readily. They have a system to do that. Whereas Baptist churches, the only place you can be voted out is a local association.
I've noticed that a lot of people are changing churches and just listening to people that work in other things as they're changing, leaving the Catholic Church because it has no activities for the children or for the elderly, and they don't support anything. I heard this from three different people at our church, coming out of my work, that saying that's why they left.
Well,
not necessarily that they just
that's true, but it might be that local parish, because I know of Catholic churches that have specific priests that are their youth people, and they are vibrant and growing. But another part of that too is that whether the parents and the grandparents make sure that the children are catechized or not. I find sometimes some of my students who are Roman Catholic are, I have students write, and I can kind of figure some of them, but not all of them. I have students write every semester in World Religions and in either Old or New Testament early in the semester. Do you believe in anything? God or anything? And why or why not? And I will regularly have students, if they're Catholic, tell me that they're Roman Catholic and why they believe and why they go to church. And most of them, their parents took them there, they learned, and they make the connections there that are meaningful to them. But, you find that in all different denominations.
This stuff's all good to know, but it ain't got nothing to do with that question.
Well, not really. Well, it does. Well, in a way, though, but Robert, in a way, it does.
Well,
it's a rabbit trail about leadership.
Well,
and about modes of leadership. And deacons are leaders in the church. Now, oh no, I got two pages of notes in addition to what I got up here. No. So now, as far as there are two primary places where qualifications of deacons are mentioned in the New Testament. Two primary places. There are other places where deacons are mentioned specifically, or those who are fellow ministers in the gospel, or Philip in Acts chapter 21, Philip the evangelist, who had four unmarried daughters who prophesied and preached. But there are two primary places where qualifications are given, and those qualifications are somewhat different and yet somewhat related. The first is in Acts chapter 6. The other is in 1 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse 8. Yeah, Paul's in there. Acts chapter 6, at the end of chapter 7, beginning of chapter 8, Paul shows up holding the coats of those people that stoned Stephen to death. So, he was there too.
That's the biggest one against him right there.
And not only that, in many churches there's more of Paul's way than there is of teachings of Jesus on how the church functions anyway. But you know the story in Acts chapter 6 where you've got the Hellenistic Christians and the Hebrew Christians, and the widows and orphans are being neglected supposedly by one group, by the Hebrew, Jewish Hebrew Christians, the Jewish Hellenistic Christians, widows and orphans are being neglected, they say. So there's a big fight and all this kind of stuff. And as I say often, something good can happen in church and you may not find out about it for a week or two. Something bad happens. Half the town knows by the end of lunch and the other half by supper time. And so you've got that going on, and it's creating issues within the church and in the community outside. And so the 12, that is the 12 apostles. When we get to the book of Acts, as we said before, the 12 disciples become the 12 or the apostles. And everybody who is a learner, who comes and joins and is a learner, is a disciple. Everybody who's a follower then in the church is a disciple.
It's the original 12 disciples,
Less Judas. Matthias. The 12 summoned the body of the disciples, so they summoned the whole church together in all of this. And they said, it is not right that we should give up preaching the word of God to diaconine, that is, to serve or work tables. Diaconine tables, to serve or to deek, as one of my colleagues a long time ago said. He did a sermon. He said they were chosen to deek. But the infinitive form of diakonos is here, to serve. So while the title is not used, the function begins here of deacon, serving. Therefore, they were to pick seven of good repute, full of the Spirit and full of wisdom, whom we may appoint to this duty. But we will devote ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word. And what they said pleased the whole multitude. They chose Stephen, a man of full of faith and of the Holy Spirit, and Philip and Prochorus and Nicanor and Timon and Parmenas and Nicolaus, a proselyte of Antioch. These they set before the apostles. They prayed, laid their hands upon them. Now, we don't know, we know a little bit about some of those. We know more about Stephen. There's a very good chance that, you know, not all deacons are always great. There's a very good chance that the Nicolaitans spoken of in the book of Revelation, with their offshoot and of heresy, there is some evidence that Nicolaus, the proselyte from Antioch, who was one of those early folks chosen to serve, to deacon, is the one who started that group later on. So, here, they're to serve. They're servant leaders. They don't leave the rest of the folks out of the process. They call together the whole group. So in this early selection of those who serve as deacon, the whole church gathered there is called together. They nominate these folks and they choose these folks as deacons or to serve. And then later it develops with the title deacon, but it's a function initially. And some of the things to notice here is, first, the body chooses. The Greek word, episkopsithē, means to choose with careful examination and inspection. So these were people that they knew, and they checked out. Okay? So, pick out or choose from among you these seven. And then we're given the qualifications. So the church is involved, and the church knows these people. That's part of the point here. It's not that somebody comes in and says, okay, it's going to be these seven. But the church is involved, and the church knows them. The qualifications of those who are chosen to serve. Martyrumenus, good reputation or good witness. Comes from the word marturios, which means witness. And Jesus said, you shall be my witnesses, my martyrs. This particular good reputation, or of good repute, as we translate it, is grounded in what other people have witnessed about them. I mean, you can be a legend in your own mind, but that's your reputation in your mind. Here, for them to have a good reputation, that means people know about them and know how they live their lives. And know their commitment. Why? Because they've witnessed it. So, contrary to a minister or a select group choosing a few, or people just walking in one day and say, oh, we got a vote, let's see, well, who's here today? Kind of thing, and then they write down names. Some of whom they may not even know, other than by name. Here, first and foremost, they're to have a good reputation, that is, their lives have been witnessed. Their commitment is witnessed. The things that they're doing and saying are witnessed by the folks in the church. So a good reputation. Two, full of the Spirit. Now, all believers have the Spirit. The New Testament teaches that. Luke, who writes Luke and Acts especially, that's very important. The same Spirit that Jesus, in which Jesus was conceived, or by which Jesus was conceived, the same Spirit that guided Jesus, the same Spirit that Jesus possessed, that Holy Spirit, is the same Spirit that enters believers when they truly believe. So all of them have the Spirit. But Luke also believed that while everyone had the Spirit, there were certain persons who were endowed by the Spirit for particular tasks. And that would be seen here, full of the Spirit, in the tasks that they did, such as bearing witness. Marturios, being witnesses, telling out, living out the truth of the gospel. So, number one, they got a good reputation, which is witnessed by others. That doesn't mean they're perfect, but their commitment and their work is witnessed by other people. and they're full of the Spirit. They're not so much full of themselves, but full of the Spirit. The Spirit, they let the Spirit guide them for specific tasks. Third, they're full of wisdom. Not just knowledge, although knowledge is important. This is both spiritual wisdom. They cultivate. And it doesn't mean that they're at the top of the heap when it comes to spiritual wisdom. But it means that they gain spiritual wisdom and they keep learning spiritual wisdom. Now they'll say, well, I've got it all, so slam the book shut and now I know it all. But they continue to learn spiritual wisdom, but they also have practical wisdom to guide the things that they do, to use their skills, to use along with their skills. I've told you all that when David had his gallbladder out, Dr. Young came and prayed ahead of time, and he also prayed after the surgery when he came out to talk with Kristen and Mary and me. And in both instances, he thanked God for the knowledge that he had gained and the skills that God had allowed him to have and to hone, and he hoped God would continue to use those skills. So this is the whole idea that the Spirit helps you with those skills and you have the wisdom, spiritual wisdom and the practical knowledge that so those skills can be used and used appropriately. And so here, those are the three primary qualifications. And notice they all are related to how a person lives their lives in the community. And their task then is to serve tables. Now, that doesn't mean that they throw a little napkin over and walk around. But what it does mean, this whole idea of serving tables, means that they take care of the needs of everyone in the church, including taking care of the physical needs of those who are the most in need. That would be the widows and the orphans. Here this whole thing is because the widows and the orphans who are representative of the weaker ones in society or those who are at most risk to help them. But it also includes, quite frankly, in the New Testament, it also includes that they not only take care of the needs of all the church, but it includes they lead not only in raising funds, but in financial contributions and in other ways, and in teaching others. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go out and preach all the time or that they're going to always be the Sunday school teacher, but they teach others what it means to be committed to God in all of these ways. Those early deacons, and it was pretty much, they oversaw the funds, but they oversaw the funds for the poor and for the needy and for the tasks of the church with advisement from the church as a whole. They didn't just decide, well, we're going to spend the money this way and that way, but they got input from the church as a whole. They were responsible to the church as a whole, and they were as responsible for raising money as they were in helping to take care of the needs of the poor in the early church. That's how, and you can read in Josephus and in some other early Christian writings about how the deacons and then the elders, some churches had elders, and deacons. Well, there are two different kinds of elders. There are teaching elders, which this develops in the Presbyterian Church out of the New Testament. There are teaching elders who typically are the ones who lead out in preaching and teaching the gospel and the nuances of the doctrines. And so you got teaching elders, and then the other elders are the ones that take care of the temporal matters of the church. So there started to be early in the church as it developed, there started to be a minor separation between in elders, between those who are the ruling elders, that's what they're called, the ruling elders, which are the ones that take care of the temporal affairs of the church, and the teaching elders who are involved in that, but not so much. They're more involved in the spiritual aspect, the doctrines, and those kinds of things. And so in those instances, there are not deacons. So you've got both in the New Testament. You've got some churches with elders, and you've got some churches with deacons.
And we don't differentiate on deacons between teaching.
No. No. No.
We don't. A lot of the concepts. A lot of the concepts are the same. Like you talk about Timothy want to go. You talk
right.
about deacons' responsibilities, beliefs, some divisions, concerns, or church that we minister with that more time to minister, so forth, etc.
Well, they're supposed to be involved in those kinds of things. Now, Stephen, in addition, the leader of the deacons, in addition to those three characteristics, we find right when he's brought up before the synagogue of the freedmen, because, once again, because of his teaching, because of his witness, it says that he's also full of grace and power. And that grace is a charism, compassionate grace, God's grace that is given. The other place is in 1 Timothy 3. And 1 Timothy 3, which is the place most people go when they start thinking about deacons. And that's where most fights occur about deacons, who can serve as a deacon or not. Those things do happen in churches. People fight over those kinds of things. Rather than going to Acts chapter 6, where they're first chosen, later on, as the church develops, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse 8, we have him talking about deacons. Now, at the beginning of chapter 3, he talks about bishops, the episkopos or the episkopoi. Bishops, which is a higher office that kind of has some authority, top-down kind of thing as well. But here in verse 8, he starts talking about deacons. We translate that word deacon as servant, as helper, as minister, as deacon. It is at this point, it is not used as a specific office of authority, but as an office of function still. Here, even later in the first century, middle of the first century or so. It is used as a function within the life of the community, not a specific office of authority. So deacon at its core and in its early development was a functional position. It was not an authoritarian position. And in some churches, it's still that way. It's more of a function than an authority. Of churches where even the minister has no say-so, it's the deacons who decide. And all points in between. The readers know the duties of the deacons. But here, deacons, while they're not perfect in all of these areas, they're to continue to work in these areas to grow and to use these to help the ministry of the church. Deacons must be, and here we read deacons, likewise. In other words, just like the bishops are to be a certain way, deacons also are to have some of those same qualities. Must be serious, not double-tongued, not addicted to much wine, not greedy for gain. They must be serious. Semnous is means serious-minded. And in particular, serious-minded about the gospel and the role of the church. Serious-minded about those things. Not double-tongued. Dialogus. Forked tongue. Double-tongued. Rather sincere. In fact, some translations, instead of saying not double-tongued, will actually read, they must be serious, sincere. In other words, mean what they say and not speak with, you know, not be double-tongued or gossipers. Not addicted to much wine. That is, not indulging in much wine. Nephilus. Rather, not just in wine, but in everything, a sense of moderation. And not greedy for gain. That is, money. Not dishonest with, but not just the money, but not dishonest with the food. You know, the food comes in and say, you know, I'd like to have that ham, so I think I'll take it and give them that kind of thing. Of course, they wouldn't be eating ham because they're Jewish Christian.
There's a Ray Stevens song, y'all, if you remember, would Jesus wear a Rolex?
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right. You think Joel Osteen's ever listened to that song? No.
I think he's not the only
No. Robert Schuller was, and a lot of others.
Tammy
Faye and Jim, yeah. Right, right. But, so that excess, not greedy, not dishonest with the food and the funds meant for the widows and the orphans. But also, not greedy for money, they are to be generous in giving to church, to the church and the ministry of the church as well. So those are added to it here in 1 Timothy chapter 3. But in addition, notice it doesn't say they ought to or they should. Verse 9, they must hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. He shifts from personal qualities here to matters of faith. Okay, they don't do it for the glory of doing it. They do this because of their faith. Matters of faith. They must hold fast. That is not just a conception, but they must adhere to the mystery of the faith. They must live the faith. Tes pisteos. That phrase, or variations of it, tes pistes, tes pistas. Pistine is faith, or pistis is faith. Pistine is to faith, or to have faith. 5 different times in 1 Timothy he uses that phrase, the faith, the faith, the faith. And for the writer, the faith refers to the body of truth that expresses the message of the gospel. Not just Jesus was born, Jesus died, Jesus rose again, but all the intricacies of the mystery of the gospel, trying to understand what God not only was doing, but how we need to understand that to help help live that. The mystery that was hidden but is now revealed. In fact, in Paul's writings overall, the mystery of the faith has not only been revealed by God only in Jesus, but it must be not only believed, but a daily practice. So they must hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. The word is a pure conscience. That is, a conscience that is not governed by selfish desires, but a conscience that allows them to make right decisions because they know what's right and they make those right decisions. Interestingly enough, though, and let them also be tested first. You know, it's actually an imperative that they are to be tested. It's not an option. It's an imperative. They are to be tested first. Then if they prove themselves blameless, let them serve as deacons. Here, that is, without a great reproach. Well, we recognize nobody's perfect. Everybody's got some flaws. But they're working on those and they're trying to overcome those and not let them be a drag on the faith.
But don't you think that means blameless, maybe of egregious things?
Right. That's what I mean. Not to excess. Not, yes.
Yeah, not the things we all fail on.
No. Major things such as, being double-tongued and greedy for gain and all those kinds of things. Using the mystery of the gospel to make boatloads of money. Or using the mystery of the gospel, greed for gain could also mean power and authority. Pushing people down by using the mystery of the gospel to do that. That's gaining in other ways. Now comes the part that proves to be oftentimes that where people's hackles get up. Okay? Well, the King James says the wives. The word gunaikos is the accusative plural form, nominative plural form of woman. It's the women. The women likewise. In other words, the women, just like the deacons likewise, just like the bishops. Okay? The women likewise must be serious, no slanderers, but temperate, faithful in all things. Now, and that's taken two different ways. There are folks who translate it wives and argue for it means the wives of deacons. And there are folks who say, no, it's the plural form of woman. And we do know there were orders of women deacons in the early church. Some people don't like the fact that history records that and they don't want to deal with history, but there were orders of women deacons in the church and they served in various functions, including, as we said before, in a lot of churches, people very literally took on the putting off and putting on motif as a symbol. And people would show up with fresh clothes and they'd take off their old clothes and go in their birthday suits into the water to be baptized and they'd come out and put on fresh clothes. And those old clothes would be given to the poor. Well, you didn't want men baptizing naked women and vice versa. And so one of the functions of women deacons, orders of women deacons, was to baptize those women in different places. They weren't within eyesight of each other when they were doing this. But they also served in other functions likewise. And we know that from a number of historical writings, not the least of which was the letter of Pliny to the Roman Emperor Trajan. The wives of deacons proponents argue, deacons are mentioned in verse 8 and verse 12, but it doesn't say women deacons specifically in verse 11, therefore they can't be, they've got to be wives. They also argue Paul does not use the feminine form of deacon. Well, the feminine form of deacon doesn't come about until later, although Paul does use that form in Romans chapter 16 of Phoebe, who is diakonalon. And they say if Paul meant women deacons, he would have given more details. Yes, Susan.
Well, but you know in Galatians where it says Christ there is no male
or female, Jew nor Greek, slave nor free.
So you're looking at a right. Pauline viewpoint rather than maybe what Christ was saying, because he would have
right. Well,
sex life,
Yeah. Right. And see, both of these Paul's arguing.
Yeah. So
probably
a lot of people feel
probably
so. About Paul that way.
Yeah.
He seems to be,
well, in some places, for example, in the Ephesian church, there are some women there who are creating a problem and an issue. And he says, you know, y'all need to calm down and don't do this because they're creating a problem, not because of the spiritual things, but because of other things. And so he writes, the letters of Paul are not, he doesn't write a letter carte blanche for the whole church in this one letter. He writes letters to different churches dealing with specific instances in those churches. The ones who talk, it means the women as in women deacons, said, since likewise is used in verse 8 of deacons being like the bishop, the use of likewise here also means women deacons, likewise like the deacons, and they also go to here. Because if he wanted to use wives of deacons, he simply would have said their wives, not the women. Different construct in Greek. But if you look at this, the four qualities mentioned for deacons, serious, not double-tongued, not addicted to wine, much wine, not greedy. If you look here, the women likewise must be serious. Same word. Same word. Not slanderers. Well, for the men, not double-tongued. It's me dialogus. And here, it's me diabolos. It comes from the same root word, so it's the same basic principle. Be temperate. Interestingly enough, nephelus in Greek is used here of the women being temperate. Guess what? Nephelus is used up here when it says deacons should not be addicted to much wine. In other words, they should be temperate. Exactly the same word that's being used of the deacons, male deacons, and these women. And then faithful in all things. Tais pistos. And we have not greedy for money, but faithful in all things, tais pisteos for the male deacons. So it's the same four things for them as there is for the male deacons. And so, you know, people argue, people fight. I have seen knockdown, drag-out fights over whether women could be a deacon or not. I've watched the Southern Baptist Convention say they can't be because Eve was first in the fall. kind of forgetting that both of them were there and both of them participated and that kind of stuff. I'm not, we're just dealing with the text here. There are different qualifications. Now, then the other one comes up, people say, well, how can a woman be the husband of one wife? Actually, deacons are to be meos gunakaios andes, a one-woman man. Okay, those male deacons are to be a one-woman man. Now, it doesn't say one woman at a time, one woman ever, but they're not to be those who run around and have multiple wives, mistresses, that kinds of things, and let them manage their children and their households well.
What did the Mormons say about that? They must not have that in their
book. The Book of Mormon supersedes and completes this one, according to them. So, yes, it was very common. Concubines, which is a legal mistress. Right. Right. Well, and for him to talk here about that, you know, those male, and typically women, the women deacons in the church typically were single in the first two centuries.
That multiple wives thing, though, usually was from rich guys like kings and tribe leaders and things like that.
Well, rich guys or wealthy businessmen, those kinds of things.
Poor guy couldn't afford more wives, wouldn't want one anyway.
Well, you know, I walk in and I'm serious. I walk into stores all the time, and if I'm in the right mood, I'll say, y'all need to change your sign. And Mary will vouch for this. And she'll just shake her head now. I said, y'all need to change your sign. So I said, there's no such thing as a free wifey. They said, well, that's Wi-Fi. I said, it's all the way you look at it. It says free wifey. So, but here, yeah, they do. They go running the other way. But with all of that too, I have had, by the way, in that other discussion on that Wednesday night, there was something that came up about those things, and I said, well, we have deacons. I said, you know, we have deacons in this church that serve on the deacon board. And it's all they can do to keep the kids out of jail. It says right here they're going to manage their children well. So if you're going to exclude women because you're going to interpret it as wives rather than women deacons, and we know historically there were women deacons as the church developed, then you're going to have to get rid of those guys. And there was sputter, sputter. And I said, oh. By the way, I said, out of the 12 deacons that currently serve, 3 of them have never been married and they're single. Unless they've done something that we don't know about, they got no children to manage. So we're going to have to kick them out too. Yeah, I said, if you're going to use these verses to say, even though women did, and Paul in Romans 16 commends Phoebe as a deacon of the church at Synchrae, and Priscilla and Aquila not only had house churches, but Priscilla helped to tutor Apollos, who was one of the super apostles at the Corinthian church. If you're going to do that, then you've also got to use it. Anybody that doesn't have kids, even if they're married, they can't serve either. Anybody that's single, they're not married, they don't have kids, they can't serve either. And then I reminded them of what Paul said about there's neither male nor female, slave nor free, Jew nor Greek, but we're all one in Christ Jesus. And the fact that the first person that Jesus revealed his messiahship to, and then she went and told others, was the Samaritan woman at the well. And the first people to tell the good news of the resurrection were women, because the guys were all hiding. And then I reminded them of Phoebe and reminded them of the 4 daughters of Philip the Evangelist in Acts 21 who prophesied and preached. And the fact that... Also, Paul says of Euodia and Syntyche that they need to make sure that they get along now because there's been some friction between them, but they have been, and you are to accept them because they have been co-laborers with me in spreading the gospel. Yes?
Managing the children well, I don't know what the word is in Greek. Could it mean respect? Because children who respect their parents tend to mind them and obey them.
Well, to manage them well doesn't mean that you got a horse whip and you... You beat them in submission. You manage them well because you teach them the gospel, you teach them the grace, you treat them with respect and love, and therefore they, that's what that does mean, Susan, yes.
Doesn't mean like you're the disciplinarian.
No, you're not the disciplinarian, the dictator.
And being, you know, harsh and cruel to make sure they follow the toe of the line.
No.
But I think some people have interpreted it that way, that, you know,
oh, they have.
Children like that, but I think to manage them really is that.
Well, and see, that's really what is meant here. It's not so much. And once again, there is also a recognition that you do everything you can to do that and to teach that. Ultimately, they have to make their own decision. If they go off the deep end, that's not you. If you have done what you determined to do in the past. If you have really done that, you've managed, and management is teaching them grace and love and the gospel and those kinds of things and how one is to live. And doing it by example. It's not this do as I say but not as I do, but it's doing it by example. You teach it, but you also teach it in living it. If they go off the deep end, you know, they have their decisions to make. It's because, once again, God gives us free choice to accept or reject. So, I don't know if the person's in the room or not, but now that I've said they misspelled explain, they probably wouldn't admit it anyway.
What was the question again?
It had to do with leadership, and in particular with deacons. Explain, E-X-P-L-E-I-N, the requirements for a deacon and the role and what should be expected of a deacon. And these expectations are not just expectations from the church and of the church for those who serve. In fact, it is a function that is not to be taken lightly. But that, at the same time, it's not to be taken so seriously that you can't live. And people can't live. But it is something to be taken seriously and to understand that we all fall. We all fall. But there is a responsibility of commitment to continue to move and continue to learn, continue to grow, and continue to serve. And he goes on to talk about, for those who serve well as deacons gain a good standing for themselves and a great confidence in the faith which is in Christ Jesus. That is, they gain a great sense of boldness to speak of their faith and to live their faith in Christ Jesus. Well, shoot.
I told you it was going to be 3 weeks.
No, it's 7 o'clock. No, not unless somebody puts part B question in there. But next week we're not going to do it anyway. We're going to be over there listening to the heavenly voices of the concert of hymns. Well, thank y'all. And thanks for the input and output.
Thank you.
God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.